Welcome to the RSA Events Podcast, the home of world-changing ideas and debate.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to this event. I'm Laura Partridge. I'm a senior researcher in the education team here at the RSA, and I'm delighted to welcome you to this event to discuss the topic at the heart of our recent report, Teen Agency, How Young People Are Changing the World. Just before we begin, a quick reminder to turn your mobiles to silent. We're filming tonight's event and we're going to be live streaming over the web, so welcome to everyone who's joining us online. For those wanting to get involved in the discussion on Twitter, that's greatly encouraged, but please use the hashtag TeenAgency, which should be up on the screen here. Before introducing our amazing panellists, I just wanted to briefly recap the key messages from our recent report, which is the result of a year of research by the team here at the RSA, in partnership with our colleagues Professor Bill Lucas and Dr. Ellen Spencer at the University of Winchester. As you'll have probably guessed from the not-so-discreet wordplay, the report is all about the agency that teenagers have to make a difference in the world. Our research shows that adolescents' desire to help others is significantly greater than adults give them credit for. However, we find that many of them don't get the opportunities to participate in the types of social action that are of maximum benefit to them and to their communities. And those are the types of social action, so volunteering and campaigning, where they have the chance to choose the issue that they want to respond to come up with a potential solution, and to drive that, to lead that, to bring about change. We heard really powerful stories of young people making a huge difference in their communities and transforming their own lives when they got those kinds of chances. And so in the report, we ask, how can we make sure that there are more of those kinds of opportunities that are available to young people? And we refer to them as double benefit, so benefit both to the young person and to the community. We also ask, how can we combat negative stereotypes that abound about young people? And those things we feel can threaten their confidence that they can really make a difference in the world. So we want to ask the panel here tonight, how do we go about doing that? And these are the questions we're going to be addressing over the course of the evening. Without further ado, I want to introduce our expert panel who are going to be helping us to answer them. So directly to my left, we have Adam Ramguly. Adam is a youth and education activist, an ambassador for the I Will campaign, and he sits on their education steering group. He's also a founder of Get to Learn, a youth advocacy group that helps young people to get their voices heard on social issues. To his left, we have Dame Julia Cleverdon. Dame Julia is an internationally renowned social campaigner with a long-held commitment to transforming education and opportunities for young people. Julia carried out a government review in 2012 on increasing young people's engagement in social action, following which she founded Step Up to Serve, which is the charity that coordinates the I Will campaign. The campaign, of which Julia is now a trustee, aims to get 60% of young people involved in practical action in the service of others by 2020. To her left is Sam Konifayende. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. And Sam is co-founder and former CEO of the award-winning youth-led creative network Liberty, and he's chair of Generation Change. He's also the author of a rather fetching new book, Be More Pirates, which recognises a rebel spirit in the generation that are just coming of age now. They're breaking the mould, asking more of life, and committing to careers that really satisfy their desire to do good in the world. Last but not least, we have Ruth Ibegbuna. Ruth is a pioneering social campaigner and youth champion. She was the founding CEO of Reclaim, an award-winning leadership programme based in Manchester that gives young working class people the chance to shape and lead change. Her latest venture is the Roots programme. It's a radical cultural exchange initiative for influencers from hugely different backgrounds, including young people from state and private schools, that aims to create a more compassionate, curious and united UK, something that I'm sure we can all get behind. So we've got a real wealth of experience on the panel this evening, and I'm really looking forward to hearing from each of them. What we're going to do is we're going to have 5-minute intros from each of our panellists, and then there's going to be an opportunity for you to ask all of your questions before we wrap up at 7 p.m, and there are going to be drinks available downstairs so we can continue the conversations. If there's anything you don't get the chance to ask this evening, you can do that later on. We're going to kick off without further ado, I think, with you, Adam. So the first thing that we wanted to ask you about was we saw this real gap emerging in our research between the way that adults perceived young people and the way that young people saw themselves and their willingness to give back to their communities. And I wondered if this is something that rings true for you and whether you have any thoughts about how we get adults, those in power, to look at young people differently and see the difference that they can make.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. I think what's this what this statistic shows lies at the core of the issue with getting young people to be involved in youth social action and getting young people represented in big firms and organisations and charities. And that's that young people clearly, as the evidence shows, over 60% want to be involved in youth social action and are involved in youth social action. But adults aren't aware of that. And as a result, they're just not opening their doors to young people. And when it comes to the big issue, and when I'm always asked, how can we get young people represented on boards, or how can we get young people doing youth social action? Really, the vast majority of the work to be done is just to simply open your doors to them, and you'll find so many of them will come to you. So it definitely rings true. But the impact of youth social action on young people is so important. For me, I'm sitting here today appearing to be confident, but about 7 years ago, I suffered from bullying, from depression. I was the shy person at the very end of the room who would never put their hand up, who wouldn't do anything, until a teacher of mine came to me and said, you know, I can see some potential in you. Join the school council, get involved in volunteering. And slowly I did so, and I started to see the benefit on me as well as on others, and the incredible benefit it has on young people to increase our self-confidence. I don't think can be found anywhere else. And I don't even think it would be an exaggeration to say that because I got involved in youth social action, that's how I was able to get out of my depression. So the impacts are beyond incredible. And what this emphasises is the role of education as well in youth social action, and how important it is to make sure that schools are providing youth social action opportunities, and how important it is that organisations are trying to reach the hardest to reach areas in the UK and trying to reach schools first, is what I believe is the most important part. So I think that what's really important is a shift in our perception of young people. I believe that as soon as adults will start opening their doors and trusting in young people, we'll then see the difference. And that's been evidenced in the past year, in the past 3 or 4 years with the I Will campaign, who believed in me, who brought me in as an ambassador as I'm acting today, and who gave me the opportunities, but also to so many national organisations, to the NHS Youth Forum, to NCS, who come to young people, who ask them for their opinions, and then see how their work can be improved. Ultimately, when young people make up 25% of the population and part of your work has to do with young people, why don't you want to hear from them, and why don't you want them to be involved? And so I guess that's why I started my organisation Get to Learn, because I see youth social action as being through three different ways. And it's almost like a scale of involvement. So when I first started about 15 years ago, we knew social action was, you know, a new upcoming thing. Volunteering was the first thing I did, and it was working in my community, addressing local issues with other young people. And then slowly I built to campaigning and advocacy and addressing wider issues in my country, in the world, and campaigning for that. And now this third issue that young people, that really gets to the crux of, well, not really, but in addition to, gets to the crux of young people changing the world and changing their society, is giving them now positions on decision boards, giving them the opportunity to shape their youth social action. And that's what's so important. And so my organisation, Get to Learn, tries to help young people get onto the decision boards and to give young people an equal stake, essentially, on trustee boards, on decision boards, something that I Will does so well, that the British Youth Council does so well. And so that's what I believe needs to be done. So, yes. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks very much. Well, that gives us a lot of food for thought. Thank you very much, Adam. I think there's a really good few questions there that we can come back to later on. But you've nicely segued into Dame Julia's section by mentioning the I Will campaign. When I was doing my introductions, I talked about the ambition that I Will has to increase the numbers of young people involved in social action. But I know that you're not just thinking about the quantity of young people getting engaged, but also in the quality of social action that they're engaging with. And I guess speaking to Adam's point about trying to create opportunities that really give young people the chance to develop, to increase their confidence. Could you tell us a little bit about I Will's priorities and how you're going about that?
Well, first of all, to say how lovely it is to be here with my co-chair, Adam, who co-chairs the education work of the I Will campaign, and how much I agree with the points the Teen Agency report says so incredibly clearly and well, and I think I Will is absolutely thrilled about this, that you say the mutually reinforcing relationship between social action and young people's creative self-confidence occurs when four conditions are met. And I think this is one of the most important bits of the report. When firstly, young people identify the problem they want to address. Secondly, when they come up with their own solutions. Thirdly, when they're able to lead the response to the problem. And fourthly, when they have the time to reflect on the impact they've achieved. And those four breaking downs of what do we mean by being youth-led, I think is one of the really helpful contributions from this review. So we're thrilled about it. The point you make is, of course, some of what the report says is an increasing evidence of quantity. But we're pretty clear in the I Will campaign, which is a time-limited campaign, started 5 years ago, practically to the week, and will end in the end of 2020. Time-limited to see what could we learn and what could we help to drive over that period. And we're very clear now that it's the quality of youth social action which will make it sustainable. Quantity, great, we can see quite a lot going on, but actually it's how you make the second sale. And that's to do with both the quality of the opportunity and the long-term engagement of young people in the way in which Adam already is able to give us 6 years' history of where he's come from, how it moved, what he's got into, and the difference he's making. And I think the report is really helpful on identifying quality. We've learnt quite a lot, I dare to suggest, largely not through anything the I Will campaign's done, but through the 875 partners who've pledged their support to try to make the growth happen. The collective impact model means that when you get unusual partnerships, so you mentioned the NHS forum, we think some of the most interesting new stuff going on is the relationship between young people, the NHS, directors of nursing, legal firms, working together to open up the opportunities in the NHS. So I'm a great believer in getting unusual teams together to solve problems that have defeated us before. I think the high quality, we believe, comes from the six principles which underlie the campaign. So this stuff has got to be embedded, it's got to be challenging, it's got to be really socially impactful, it's got to be youth-led, it's got to be progressive, you've got to move on, as you rightly just made the point, and you've got to have time to reflect. That's what will produce high-quality results. The youth-led social action, we think, produces the highest quality of a double benefit, a benefit to the community and a benefit to the young people. And it's not surprising, because for all of us, the decision we take ourselves is the one we're most highly motivated to make work. So some of the, perhaps, earlier years of social action, which was basically a sort of cafetiere method, let us tell you what you need to do, let us plunge the message down, crushing the grounds beneath us, that actually will not get the ownership that a percolator method will get, in which you occasionally scald yourselves, occasionally it all goes fantastically badly wrong, but by and large you get better coffee and better ownership by the grounds. So I'm a great believer in youth-led, even though occasionally it lends us in a bit of challenge. But how can it be that only 2% of all trustees on charity boards across Britain are under 25? And the average age of trustees is something appalling, like 59. I mean, I'm 68. What the hell am I doing? I wouldn't be able to be here if it wasn't for Adam, to be honest. But I think that the most worrying thing out of the report is the absolutely shocking statistic that on 2,000 adults being asked on, I'm sure, a very high-quality survey, only 5% of them think that young people are likely to do any social action. That flies in the face of everything I've learnt in the last 20 years through the driving of Teach First or meaning and purpose of young people or anything else. So I don't know where we found these 2,000 adults, but in my book, they're wrong. And the other bit of evidence I would call on is the National Citizen Service work, which over the last 6 years has put about 500,000 young people through a four-week programme. And I'm proud to be on the new Royal Charter Board to keep supporting and driving the quality of youth social action in that programme. But there, the overwhelming thing that comes back from parents and carers who've seen their young people go through this is how proud they are and impressed by their motivation on the social action. I was with a group of young people in Luton the other day with one of the I Will ambassadors who was being the team leader, and there were a group of parents who were there, absolutely so impressed with what young people in Luton had done about the homelessness issues in Luton. So I'm worried about that stat, and we need in the I Will campaign to do some more work to unpick what this is about. And I've almost finished. I do think that the gap, which Teen Agency rightly identifies, which Ruth will be powerful and strong on, this is, you will, good, is the gap on the socioeconomic backdrop, which is that middle class girls by and large are doing at least an average of 51% of them are involved in social action, whereas in the poorer communities, it's at 32%, which is why the work on what's going on in the schools serving the most important communities in the poorest places is so critical. Young people in the poorest places have a greater will to do this, but appear to have less either self-confidence or opportunity to make it happen. And as you and I know, it's 660 secondary schools that are serving those young people. So it's not beyond the bounds of the I Will campaign and everybody else's support to identify, and that's where I think your work is so important. What is it which is making it happen when it is happening? One final shout out for the importance of the younger age group. Some of the surveys of this have been 14 to 18. We're pretty clear that this needs to begin much earlier. Young people who get involved in their communities before the age of 11 are 2.5 times more likely to sustain than those who don't start until they're 16. So that's why some of the work that the I Will Fund is doing, which I think is a really important learning opportunity for all of us, chaired by Dr. Rania Mirandos, helping to see whether 40 million, backed by another 40 million of I Will Fund matches, including organisations like PAIRS and Comic Relief and some great philanthropists, that will produce us, through 20 new partners, 650,000 new opportunities where we can identify what we can learn about high quality opportunities in that investment. And that will be, in my book, one of the most important things to secure the legacy for the I Will campaign.
I feel I should say that it was YouGov that found the 2,000 adults, which is not to throw them under the bus, but I think that they went about it in following their usual processes. I think it's interesting when you look a little bit further into the report, that was the percentage of adults that thought that young people were very likely to give back to their communities. There's actually a greater proportion who think that there's some likelihood that young people might give back. So that's just worth saying as a caveat. But I'm really glad that you mentioned the I Will Fund. So we actually have something to announce today, which is that the PAIRS I Will Fund has very kindly decided to support work that we're going to be doing in the primary schools as part of RSA Academies. And we're going to be looking at how you can deliver high quality social action to young people from that younger age cohort. I think that people sometimes wonder, is it possible to give young people that leadership opportunity if they are so young? And we're going to test whether that really is possible. So thank you for mentioning that. Sam, on to you. So we know that this generation just coming of age now, as you talk about in your book, face uncertain times, and yet they seem to be more motivated than ever to change the world. And I wonder if that's something that you've seen shift over the course of your career, and whether you see opportunities for that to come together with the innate creativity that young people have to make a real difference in communities.
I brought the book with me, not in a shameless act of self-promotion, although maybe, because it's probably the most articulate I've ever been on it. And at the end of 20 years of working directly with young people, I kind of shouted my frustration into this book. I've run Liberty for nearly 20 years. I set it up in my early 20s, and I always joked that when I hit 40, I'd have to hand over to a younger team, partly because when you're in your early 20s, 40 seems like it will never happen. But it did, of course, and it wasn't a joke, and I had to step out of it. And so all of my knowledge and experience went into this. But I would say something briefly on this report. I'd say that it should serve as a warning to anybody who's surprised by the findings of it. It should serve as a warning as to how out of touch we are with a generation who offer us so much. And if you look at the leadership demonstrated in this report on the most important and pressing issues in our society today of community integration, of messages around the topics that matter, you see leadership that is not being demonstrated elsewhere right now. Because if we're out of touch with young people here, we're shit out of luck with the leadership that we've currently got, heading in a direction of travel no one really knows where it's going. I would put my money on this side of the table. I know that sounds extreme, and I do not mean to make this an intergenerational competition, but I think we run a very serious risk sometimes of talking about this space in an almost benevolent way. We've listed out all the great organisations and the great work that they do, no doubt, but we haven't credited the most people who deserve it, which is the young people themselves. In 20 years, I've seen such a shift in a group of young people. It's extraordinary. And that's really where the credit for this belongs. I sat in this, room downstairs about 18 months ago, as we talked about a similar set of findings around youth entrepreneurship. And a similar chart is factored. There are more entrepreneurs, there are more companies formed last year by under 30-year-olds than ever in history. If you want a real sense of it, step outside the formal entrepreneurship process and try and find a 20-something in this country who's not got some kind of side hustle on the go or isn't involved in one. But then you can look to the drinking statistics out last week. You can look to the rise of veganism, one of the most political acts you can make that even our Minister for Climate Change can't even make a comment on. And you've got a generation taking action into their own hands in a way that they have to because they don't feel the power is coming from anywhere else. And there I see leadership again and again, consistent levels of leadership. And we run the risk by segmenting it into social action or entrepreneurship or to not understand the potential that we have in front of us because they need them more than we need us. I mean, we need them far more than they need us. So many times I feel that, consistently. And yet we run the risk of overlooking it by turning it into a report, looking at it as another silo, and acting benevolently towards them. They're the ones who underlie all this change and impact that's being created. And Adam, to you and all your colleagues, as well as thanks to all those organisations, I think you deserve that credit. Otherwise overlooked and at our risk. It's that kind of thought that went into this book. And I was pleased to have the chance to speak the truth, and I am truly surprised by the response the book has had. And maybe we'll come back to that, but I'd like to touch on that statistic about the way that young people are viewed. So this is how it begins. 300 years ago, a small group of frustrated and underappreciated, mostly young people, had finally had enough of living in a society run badly by a self-interested and self-serving establishment. Disruption had become the constant backdrop to their lives as they faced ongoing uncertainty and mass redundancy in a world plagued by ideologically influenced international conflict. This generation felt entirely abandoned, and they were right. The odds were stacked high against them in every single way. The rules of the day favoured an elite few, and for the majority of people, life was unclear, unfair, and unfulfilling. Sound familiar? Rather than simply voice their complaints, they chose instead to do something about the situation. No longer prepared to sit quietly and accept the bad deal on the table, they broke the rules and then remade the rules. And along the way, they came up with a new social contract built on purposeful principles such as fair pay, fair say, social equality, freedom, justice, and rum. You see, this is the true history of Golden Age pirates, who created disruption at the edges of society and politics during the dawn of capitalism to leave a legacy that has changed the way we live forever. Which is handy, because now, 3 centuries down the line, we are in need of inspiration about the best way to give the current establishment a kick up the backside. To better tackle the world's looming crisis, we have a similarly self-interested political and business elite, pressing the buttons of power, who for the most part show no sign of stepping up to the challenge in any meaningful sense. And rather than gracefully hand over more authority to the generations destined to live with their mistakes the longest, the folks who have royally overcooked the future continue to run the show, A, in their own interests, and B, badly. Much of this generation is now afflicted by an epidemic of anxiety and a crisis of identity in direct response to the turbulence, uncertainty, and emptiness that many of them face. Living costs are rising while real incomes are falling and the distribution of wealth and opportunity grow more unequal than ever. The whole generation feels excluded from their own future, and they are sick of being told that's just the way things are and that they are naive for expecting such basic amenities as decent housing or free healthcare or higher education. A lot of people will tell them not to worry, that technology will save them and everything will be okay in the end, but it is not true. No one is coming to save you. It's going to get worse before it gets better. There is now an urgency in the air and a need for change. If we want to improve this picture of our future, we need to look at the young people who are doing it themselves. The only way out of this mess is a little less Instagram and a lot more action. And it's from interviews I've done around the world with thousands of young people over the last few years, and in it I found a reverse vacuum of the one that's said here. Young people who believe they have the power to change the world in their hands. And their world might be their village, it might be the entire world. I conducted these interviews in rural areas, urban areas, with educated young people, with young people from really tough backgrounds. Their belief is they have the power to change the world, and at the same time, they do not believe that we, the institutions that are supposed to back them, have their back. And there's a statistic just out from Norina Hertz. 20,000 young people were asked, did they believe that the institutions of power will operate in their best interests? The response, who said yes, was 6%, directly mirroring the small minority of adults at their end who could have such a positive view back on young people. There is a distinct intergenerational risk and a challenge.
Thanks very much. I think you set out a really shocking picture, and hopefully over the course of this event we can get to what some of the solutions might be and how young people can start to tell different stories themselves and have those heard by people in power, so they might seed some of that power and things might be done differently. But we'll come back to that. Ruth, one of the really critical points in our report was about the way in which double benefit social action, as both Dame Julia and I have spoken about, where young people get a benefit as well as the communities, is especially beneficial to young people from disadvantaged backgrounds who have a lot to gain from those developmental opportunities, but also have a lot to give because they understand the issues in the communities. And I was really interested in your perspective on that from the work that you've done over the years with Reclaim.
I generally see myself as quite an optimist and a really positive person, but I feel a bit bleak around this, to be totally honest. I think there's two things. I sat listening to everything, and I was thinking about the fact that in 2015 there was a report saying that children in the UK were the unhappiest in Europe and among the unhappiest in the world. And I remember listening to Radio 4 that morning and just thinking, wow, this is going to lead to a seismic change in the way that we view young people, and we'll do things differently and we'll include them, and absolutely nothing happened, really. We just all, it ran on the news that day, and I think we might have talked about mental health a little bit more that day. On top of that, I used to train youth workers in Manchester who were going through their courses at university. Recently, I've become so profoundly depressed at how many of them I run into who were out of work. They had jobs, and then austerity cuts, the youth sector, unemployment has loomed, and so many of them that were brilliant youth workers have now had to retrain as other workers in other fields. And the reason I want to say this is because I know that most of them are not in this room, and I feel that a lot of the communities that I work with, the young people, they were their lifeline, and that lifeline has gone. And, you know, you hear people on the plane saying you have to put your own oxygen mask on before helping other people. And I'm working with young people who are involved in social action, but it's helping the families. It's picking up the little brothers and sisters from school. It's helping mum. It's being involved in all different things that actually they're busier than their middle-class peers, to be totally honest. A lot of them don't have time for youth social action, and it is a shame because they would get so much out of it, but they've got to prioritise, and their priorities are to survive and then to try and thrive and to support their families. And I taught for many years in Moss Side in Manchester, and I saw young people there who were incredible, charismatic young leaders who didn't have time to lead and no one was looking at them to lead. So I started an organisation called Reclaim in 2007. And what's really interesting with Reclaim is that the organisation started off working with disadvantaged young people, and after several years, those young people came back to us and said, we don't want to be called disadvantaged anymore. We're sick of people feeling sorry for us. We hate that label. How would you feel walking onto a stage and being introduced as a disadvantaged young person? So I said, fair enough, okay. They said, we feel this organisation's working for the adults but not for the young people. So we said, what do you want to be called? And interestingly, they said, working class. They said, but we want to work to kick the stigma out of being working class. And what we found was once we threw out our strategic plan, let our young people around the table, got them to get rid of the carefully marketed work that I'd built my life on, the organisation got much better. The engagement from the young people was so much stronger. And what we found was the young people didn't necessarily want to do youth social action. What they wanted to do was campaign for change, but real change on things that they deemed important to them. Once we said to the young people, right, OK, let's have a manifesto. What do you want to change in your local areas? Well, straight away, the Salford girls who were 12 years old said, we want older men to stop harassing us on the streets because it's making us distressed. What was interesting was Greater Manchester made up of 10 different boroughs. The following year, when they released the street harassment report, Salford was way above the other areas. Those 12-year-old girls had their fingers on the buttons way before anyone else, and they put their time and energy into campaigning on the streets with placards, getting their dads and uncles to understand how it felt as a 12-year-old girl to have older men leering at them on the streets. There was a young girl in a council estate, a young girl called Shawnee, and she said that actually, if she told people she was from her estate, boys thought, in her words, that you're easy if you're from that estate. She got the other girls from that estate, they were all 12, 13 years old, to all campaign in the more affluent areas to get people to understand that Brinnington girls could be more than people thought. We found that once we completely handed over power to the young people, and that means budgets as well, power, how should this money be spent? If you're putting in for money for a project, what automatically happens a lot of the time is people get an adult youth worker to run the project. We said to our young people, there's £8,000, how should it be divvied up? We also said to the young people, what kind of change do you want to see? And when we said that, they campaigned about refugees. They campaigned, one of our biggest campaigns was our young people in Manchester found out about Stephen Lawrence and they said, we didn't know who he was. And he shouldn't be forgotten. So they campaigned to go into schools to tell people about the Stephen Lawrence murder. Working class young people can be completely and totally turned on by all this. But the moment they feel, and this links back to what you were saying, the existing power structures are not there for them. And so often they find that so many things are invited to, they get there and they don't feel that it's speaking to their truth. The most successful campaign that I've ever supported was young women who have been part of our project, one of whom who was the victim of the horrific child abuse that we saw in Rochdale. She then decided, because we told her that she could be a leader, to go and find other young women who'd also been victims of child abuse, and they then formed their own group, and they then campaigned, formed their own social enterprise, and they teach teachers, social workers, young people nationally. And they're young people who you would think are the most marginalised and least likely to engage. They know most about this subject because they've got the lived experience. If we allow young people to lead on things they feel passionately about, they will lead brilliantly. But we cannot tell them what to feel passionate about. And if anyone's in any doubt, all we need to do is look at those Parkland survivors of the shootings. Anyone who saw any of those 16, 17-year-olds speaking about something that had deeply touched them, how could you not be moved? They were more effective than any of the adult lawmakers around that issue. So I suppose my plea is, I know that the figures are saying that the poorer children are not as engaged. Maybe we're asking them the wrong questions, and maybe we just need to ask them what they care about and what they want to fight for.
Thanks, that's really helpful. I think it's really interesting that you spoke about that moment of handing over power for your organisation, how transformative that was. And I think there's many organisations that think about how they might get youth more involved in making decisions. And also the government with their new civil society strategy has talked about some initial steps into involving young people more in designing policy making. I was really interested in everyone's reflections on that kind of move with the civil society strategy to get young people a little bit more involved in advising and in evaluating youth social action programmes. Do you think that goes far enough, and do you have any advice for the government on how to make it work really effectively?
The government shouldn't be doing it.
The government could keep their sticky hands well away. That would be very helpful.
Absolutely. The government shouldn't be anywhere near it. The government should leave people who are trusted by young people to work and do the work and then present back the findings that will be presented back by young people. That's just my opinion.
I agree. This whole wave that I've been so impressed by, you know, the kind of crest of it in the last few years, one of the key things we can do is get out of the way more. You know, you need some really good substance and support, and then get out of the way. When young people in those kind of stories are empowered to start projects, then how do we get behind them? And we still have this falsely benevolent idea that we have to lead young people each and every single time. And the strategy smacks of that, because if you really want youth participation, there's many proven ways right in front of you to go about it. You know, huge participative methods, you know, well documented to really involve young people. That's not what's being discussed. So it reeks of tokenism to me from the outset.
I think there's a combination between cafetiere and percolator. I think it's unlikely that the powers that are in control of the levers at the moment are necessarily going to hand them over. I think there's some encouraging stuff, actually, in the civil society strategy, because I think it really makes the point clearly about place, which I don't think we've really seen before. Some of the most exciting things that I think the I Will campaign has been involved with is not only the 250 I Will ambassadors, who are very much shaping the future of the campaign, but also things like Young Manchester, where I think there really is an effect going on getting young people to say what they believe needs to be tackled in Young Manchester. There just need to be much more of Young Bristol, Young Blackpool. Though, interestingly, in Blackpool the other day, with the young carers, 700 young carers in Blackpool, an immensely impressive operation running in Blackpool in the support of young carers, who, as you say, actually, do you call caring for your mum youth social action, or do you call it part of how my life is? So I think there are some interesting things going on in trying to put more power in the hands of young people on the changing of the world. Where I want to see more of it is in schools, where I still don't think that we, you know, there are some fantastic examples of what is going on, but it's not to scale. I mean, if you, you know, you got involved because a teacher said to you, come on, get going on the student council. Student councils are not generally the places where great decisions are taken in the vast majority of the schools I know. But is there hope?
I think so. Perhaps quite controversially, I do welcome the civil society strategy.
And I
think it's because it's still an improvement in that the government is finally putting focus on the important, they're acknowledging that the voices of young people are really important, and that's something that they've never done before. Funny enough, on Friday I was at the first civil society strategy group meeting that involved young people, and we discussed this, and I completely acknowledge it, and I think that it is true in the end. Will this be something that involves young people as much as we'd like to? Probably not. But I think the fact that already they're keen to get young people involved, all that I want to see is that this, what they're trying to do is to help us, help other organisations that do it well, strengthen their communities. And I think that that's what they're trying to do. They're not necessarily trying to do the work themselves. They're just trying to raise awareness for organisations and communities to help make the difference they want to make. And what's most important to me is that this isn't going to lead to a feedback loop where it's just going to be young people giving their ideas, then adults making decisions and no communication. And for me, although this is in really early stages, the fact that they're already involving young people from the beginning, I welcome, and I hope that we will see in the next few years this strategy coming out with young people being involved throughout the process, especially in the implementation and the creation of the strategy.
I can certainly hope. So I think it's time now to open up for audience questions. So what we're going to do is, if you can raise your hand if you've got a question, my colleagues at the back have some mics that they're going to bring to you. We're going to take a couple of questions at a time. I'd love to see some hands up from women as well, if possible. And if you could just say your name and try and keep your questions brief, because we'll probably have quite a lot to get through. So I'm going to take the lady on the back row there. There's a gentleman at the front here, and then we'll come back for another round.
Hi, I'm Grace. I'm from Westminster City School. Got some pupils here tonight from my sociology class. I've actually been given the responsibility of leading my school council, and I feel actually that sometimes I'm kind of shivved in kind of a tick box to encourage this youth social engagement. And I'm actually having quite a difficulty kind of with organisations. Being from a state school, we don't have money to kind of bring people in and give leadership kind of seminars. So anything that you can recommend... would you actually? I would absolutely
Literally,
love that.
If you play my train, I'll come and do that. And I would love to talk to your students and work with you.
Amazing. But yeah, any that's amazing. I really, really appreciate that offer. Any other tips that to help me with this role that I've got? And I'm sure the girls here would love that as well. Thank you.
Way and we'll come back to it. Could we just take the question from this gentleman as well, please? Thank you.
Good evening, Colin Wright. Now, I have not read the report. So... can you tell me, for the purposes of the statistics that you've been giving us, how you define social action?
Yeah, of course. I'll take that one first. So actually, we use quite a broad definition. We spent quite a lot of time about thinking what to include and what not to include. And we decided that everything from everyday acts of kindness through to more formal volunteering essentially counts. But when you're asking people in a polling exercise, it's easier to ask them to talk about things that you can quickly name. And so we ask them about things like volunteering. We ask them about mentoring and we ask them about campaigning. So some of the stuff that we didn't capture is probably the everyday acts of kindness or the help that someone might give day to day to a friend or family. And we understand that that's really important. And so in the literature review and in the focus groups, we also looked at those kinds of things. I know that the I Will campaign have done a lot of thinking about sort of how to define social action. And you have a really useful phrase, don't you, about acts in the service of others.
I think we say it's practical action in the service of others. But just as you, we would, on the annual survey, which the government pays for over the last 5 years, to see what the movement is, we do prompt volunteering, campaigning, cause driving, whatever. So I think it's quite a range. And as you see, we can see the percentages going up of young people saying they're involved. You say 68% in your figure. We think that's pretty high. What is interesting in the I Will campaign is you can see why Scotland is as high as it is and East Anglia isn't. So if you get onto our website, you'll see quite an analysis. Now, is that to do with rural bus services or is that to do with just failing to capture it in East Anglia? So I think it's a really important question as to what you do include. And this is... our concern is about the quality of this that keeps it going.
Fantastic. And then on the first question, if you are leading your school council and you want to make the most of that opportunity, what is it that you can do?
So the experience we've had of it is to follow from Ruth's, and it's about as much youth empowerment as you possibly can, and then, you know, allow your young people to then follow it through. So there is, you know, depending on where you're based, I would also volunteer Liberty to help, you know, the networks that everybody has got. There's few people that can't respond well to a well-articulated request from a bunch of young people, I think, and people often won't ask because they'll presume that they're not going to get somewhere. You know, I would also add my voice to happily coming to volunteer, but probably much better than me, I can make several recommendations that can come your way. And I know it's hard to go and ask and find yourself into networks and rooms, but I would take, you know, credit for what you've just done. You've come into the right room, asked the right questions, then you'll get the support. Invariably, that's what tends to happen.
And I think as well, I would start off with just working out with the group, everyone, what are your priorities? What are your priority areas? And then having maybe a list of maybe 5 or 6 things over the year they're going to work on. And that's it. Everything else stays out of the room. We're just going to be focused on those things. Then for each of those things, work out what change you want to see. So it's there. It's on the wall. Everyone can see it. This is a change that we're going for on this issue. And then who do we need to get? And then be really aggressive with you kind of writing out to people, because that's a very kind of state school thing. You know, oh, who could we get? Just write the letters, because that's what a private school would do. Just write the letters and get people in. And you will get people who would love to come and help them on each of the points, but be very clear in terms of what change you're trying to create. Okay.
It's interesting, we were talking about this a little bit before we came in tonight, about the connections that middle-class young people have and how they can draw on those to make a change. And it can be a little bit difficult if you're starting out without those already in place, but great that you came tonight and we've already managed to make a couple for you. Any more questions? So could we take a gentleman in the middle at the back here, one at the front here, and then we'll take one on the back row as well.
Doug Mather, I'm a fellow here. I have to say, given the title, I was a little disappointed with this evening. Echoing what Julia said in your introduction, I'm not quite sure what the average age in this room is tonight, but I was hoping that rather than a bunch of old people talking about young people, we'd have more young people here talking about what they're up to. So actually, my question really is for you, Laura. Can we organise an RSA Engage type event where we actually have some of the young people that you've been interacting with and talking with actually here talking about what they're up to so that we can learn more about that?
Great.
Can I say something? Yeah. There's a young man at the back who's going to kill me right now. He's called Elijah. He's someone that I've been mentoring for years, and I asked him to come along. And I would like to swap places with him, because I completely agree. You've got viewpoint. Elijah, you've got a million things to say. You are bright as a button. And I would like him to swap places with me on the stage. Because, yeah, come on. Do it. Come on. Yeah, I'll give him mine.
Mics. In the meantime... I'm going to take a question here. Oh, sorry, have you lost the mic?
No, we've got a mic over there.
Okay, great, thank you. Yeah.
My name's Patrick Green, I'm also a fellow, and I think that was an absolutely fantastic suggestion, by the way. What I wanted to ask was, in my work, I'm on 3 different technology platforms for volunteering, where, and sometimes it's literally, we need someone tomorrow at 10:30 in the morning, and there's no expectation we'll necessarily be able to do it, but there are enough of us that we often are able to field people to just step up to the plate. And having heard the exchange about the lady at the back trying to get someone to come to her school and immediately saying, yes, I'll do it, I mean, are there any good technology platforms that facilitate that kind of contact that would take away the disadvantages of not having contact and make it all more easy?
Thank you. And there was one final question on the back row there.
Hi, my name is Danny. I think I agree with the gentleman here. Definitely would like to see young people having a voice here at the event. I have a small concern. So I've worked for quite large in American companies here in the UK, and one of the concerns that I have is that I see a high churn rate of young people and people coming into these companies working for a few months, and then there's this term called performance. If they don't hit their performance targets, they're quickly turned around and shown the door, and without little concern about their development and also you know, their growth and their careers. This happened to me recently, so I've seen a gap in the market in the previous company that I worked for in the workspace industry, and I'm going to take a plunge and start my own business. So I welcome anyone in the audience or anyone in the panel to, you know, provide any advice and guidance who has started their business. So my question is, what can companies do and how can we change the attitude within businesses and the culture to encourage development, moral development and the mental health of young people in their companies? And also a question directly to Sam, if I could buy a copy of his book, Be More Pirate, after the event.
Thank you. Sure, Sam will be thrilled with that. Would anyone like to comment on the question on technology platforms that can facilitate social action?
So the largest volunteering opportunities website is called V Inspired, and not a website, but and all the available technology that it should be, and has been around for an awfully long time, and thankfully so. It's consistent, so it retains decades worth of knowledge around volunteering now. And it's got lots of ideas for what comes next, and I think that's the important part, because I don't think anything yet does justice to this space. And I think that's, you know, classically the case in social sector services. Rarely does technology and data live up to the other places it does in our world. And, you know, that's a big question around this. The data is available. There's one or two opportunities. Generation Change, backed by iWill, is doing probably the first of its kind data mapping around volunteering opportunities. And it's ambitious, and it's got a good range of data to begin with. But whilst it, in one sense, bodes well for what can come, it also shows how far this space is behind. You know, if you want some fast food or a massage delivered to your house, you know, it can be instantaneous. So there's a big question to be asked. Why haven't we got anywhere near the kind of technology that modern society, and in particular young people, use, and why is that acceptable? So I think there's a challenge back to the sector to catch up in
there,
technology.
Is there anything specifically for mentoring?
There was, and it got shut down. But I can tell you about a program called Mentor Me, started by a young man called Richard Ashimuga, who I mentor, and that's working really well into the professional services sector, and I'd be happy to introduce you to him. And you, sir, can have this book. Entrepreneurs in the room should... people who want opportunities should ask for them. So I think they should always be rewarded.
Can do to support. I know this is something that the iWill campaign's been thinking about quite a lot. Can you respond to that?
Well, I think companies that have got any sense, and some have, must be absolutely concerned about how they provide and encourage meaning and purpose for the young people who are working with them. And given that the average length of time that any graduate stays in any company is now 2 years, 6 months, by and large, where they are not providing meaning and purpose, I think young people are walking with their feet. So I think there are some organisations and businesses that are doing some quite interesting things. In the iWill campaign, we're very interested to see what the opportunities are for those who are taking on apprentices. How far are apprentices now going to be, have some real youth voice about the quality of what's going on, and how far are they being supported in their youth social action? But I think it is about different ways. You look at the co-op, they've got a youth board. So a B&Q. We think more companies can do much more about engaging youth voice, both in their products, their services, how they run, how they're organised. And there are some good examples about the place. Have a look on the iWill campaign.
And Elijah and Adam, can I ask you about, we've obviously got a lot of adults in the room, the point's been made, and we definitely want to create more spaces for young people. Is there anything that adults can do as part of that to support you getting more involved, to open those doors? Is there anything that we could all be doing differently?
So I think first things first, I can only truly speak from personal experience. And what's been like a reoccurring theme within this conversation is communities that are seen as disadvantaged. Now, I'm not sure if you've heard of an area called Mosside. Can I have a show of hands for people that have, please? Okay, so that is a very community that I came to grow up in. As a child, when you have dreams and aspirations, especially when you project yourself into the world, but you're seen as, essentially, you've got to live up to the stereotype of low aspirations, crime, and especially a lack of interest in terms of yourself, when that is your only reference to your identity, it can be very difficult to pursue even the slightest opportunity. And when I speak about myself growing up, The moment I truly found things change within my life, it's when I came across Reclaim, and I was able to meet Ruth. And not only that, but aside from my educational upbringing, a place where even my teachers had limitations on my own capability, being able to meet Ruth was the first person that said, yes, they can. So back to your question, which is completely true. I think the best way adults can support young people is through being able to cultivate ambition. It's being able to give them a platform where they can speak and project themselves. Because like Ruth mentioned before, and Sam as well, when we're talking about working class young people, their lives in general, they can't always take opportunities. They have responsibilities. So I think being able to just give them a platform to express that is fundamentally vital. Thank you.
Thank you. We're actually...
platform, we do have to watch out, because that benevolence creeps back in. If we start talking about the creation of youth boards and other things, which, you know, it's good to kind of celebrate, but I think this goes back to the civil society point. I think involving young people at a participatory level is dangerous to celebrate that too much, because that's a baseline expectation of mine now and has been for a decade or more. And I've seen numerous organisations make tokenistic gestures of involving young people and putting boards together. And I think whilst you fanny around with that, at another level, at another pace, are a group of young people taking ownership. And so the biggest threat to any organisation desperately trying to cling on to Gen Z is Gen Z starting businesses of its own. Biggest threat to the university business model, trying to work out how it stays relevant, is young people teaching themselves. And they're coming through at a pace.
Is there any chance of having one extra question?
I'm afraid, well, actually, I'm very wary. Excuse me, I'm sorry, we've run out of time and I really don't want to hold people later than they were expecting to be here, so we're going to have to run.
We'll talk downstairs.
There's an opportunity. We're going to go down for drinks afterwards. So over a glass of wine or a glass of orange juice, there's a chance for anyone to ask any questions that they didn't get to ask right now. So I'm really sorry there wasn't a lot of time for questions. But I did want to say a huge thank you to our speakers this evening. So thank you to Adam and to Julia and to Sam and to our late edition, excellent late edition. Thank you very much. And thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, head to our YouTube channel for inspiring talks, interviews, and animations.